Welcome, fellow explorers. My name is Christian Alexanderson, and this is Hemlocks to Hellbenders, a podcast highlighting Pennsylvania's parks, forests, and great outdoors. In the soft light of dawn, a lone figure stands by the water's edge, casting a line into the stillness. The morning's mist hangs low, obscuring the surface as they patiently wait, listening to the quiet sounds of nature stirring awake. With a steady hand, they feel a tug of a Pennsylvania trout beneath the surface. Engaging in a brief but furious struggle, the angler emerges victorious. The brook trout's slender body, adorned with a tapestry of colors, flickers with iridescence. A mosaic of olive green blends seamlessly into a canvas of creamy gold, speckled with patterns of crimson and marigold, reminiscent of autumn leaves scattered on the forest floor. After having won the match, the fisherman releases the trout back into the cold waters, a simple yet satisfying start to the day. This episode is all about the art, that's right I said art, of fishing. Every year, hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians look forward to the opening of trout season, which takes place on the first Saturday of April. They prepare their rods and reels, purchase new lures, watch endless YouTube videos, and are finally ready for trout season. Believe it or not, Pennsylvania has the second largest number of waterways in the country, only behind Alaska. We have more than 86,000 miles of rivers and streams in the Commonwealth. As a result, Pennsylvania has a long, storied legacy of fishing that dates back before European settlers came here. But what's the state of the hobby? How popular is it? Are kids picking up the rod and reel? And what about the fish populations? How are they being managed? Are fish being conserved and harvested appropriately? We answer those questions and many more during this episode. But you might be thinking, listen here, park boy, I don't fish, and I'm not interested in fishing. Don't fret, my sweet listener. We're going to be talking about waterway conservation, habitat restoration, and much more that'll keep you learning and interested. I'm excited to welcome Mike Parker to the podcast. Mike is the communications director for the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. Mike, thanks so much for joining the program.
Thanks so much, Christian. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Can you tell us about the role of the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission?
Sure. So the mission of the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission kind of says it all. It's to conserve, protect, and enhance Pennsylvania's aquatic resources and provide fishing and boating opportunities. So, you know, there's a couple of elements there on the face. You know, for most people who think of what is the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission, it's the place where you know when you buy your fishing license or you renew your boat registration or buy a launch permit for your kayak, that's who it's going through. And the funding that we achieve through the sales of fishing licenses and those boat registrations and some other sources we can talk about in a bit about how we're funded and things. But, all that money supports the agency and the agency supports that mission. So it's a circular, cycle of user pays, user benefits. And, the role of Fish and Boat Commission is really what it says. It's all about fishing and boating. And it's the agency that manages those recreational activities all across the state of Pennsylvania.
In 2024, the Fish and Boat Commission is scheduled to stock 3.2 million adult trout in 697 streams and 129 lakes open to public angling. What kind of effort does that take from staff and volunteers?
Yeah, it's an exciting time of year. When we start getting into trout season, that big opening day experience is what people have been looking forward to, for really decades at this point. When you think about it, our agency founded back in the mid 1800s, when sportsmen looking forward thought, recognized that without management of our aquatic resources, the water, the water quality was not good back in the 1800s, but people wanted to fish and they were finding that, hey, the things that we're doing through industry and maybe just not being responsible with the amount of fish that we're catching and those type of things, they realized that it was going to take some management if they wanted these amazing activities, to continue and have, native fish species populating our waterways. They were going to have to manage them. So that's how our agency was really created. And as part of that, the trout fishing has always been a part of Pennsylvania's heritage. Of course, we have our native brook trout, which inhabit our cold water streams all across the state. But in order to provide, to feed that fishing hunger that people have, and make sure that we have enough fish in the waterways and make it so that opportunities aren't spread thin, we do stock. We have 14 state fish hatcheries across the state of Pennsylvania. and eight of those hatcheries primarily, they produce an abundant amount of trout that we stock all across the state, as you mentioned. So from February 20th about, and it's like the day after President's Day, in mid to late February, all the way through the opening day of trout season on this year being it's always the first Saturday in April, but this year being April 6th, we're out there stocking, dozens of trips a day going from those hatcheries, hundreds of miles, from all corners, from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh to the Poconos to Erie and everywhere in between. We've got staff that is, out. They're up early in the morning. They're loading thousands of these trout onto the trucks, and then they're driving hundreds of miles in some cases to get their destination to put them in the water. So, it's not something that we could do alone. We kind of did it alone in the 2020 season for the first time in a long time because of some of the restrictions that we had on our agency and everyone had on them because of social distancing and all those things that were imposed. But we really rely on volunteers. So along with all of our staff at the hatcheries, our waterways conservation officers, who other, sometimes people just call them fish wardens, but it's the guys in the green that you might see checking your license every once in a while. The traffic control and the coordination that they do to get these stockings performed on some of these back roads of Pennsylvania. I mean, it takes a lot of coordination. So yeah, I mean, the answer to your question, a lot, and it never stops. And just because we get to opening day, we've got at least half the fish in the water that we're going to stock for the year. At that point, you said 3.2 million, but the other trout that we're going to be putting in come in the form of replenishment stockings. So some streams are getting stocked two or three times each trout season. So opening day is exactly what it is. It's opening day for us. It's just that's the goal. That's the first goal we want to hit, and then we continue to go back and we do that again. So we're going to continue to stock all the way, really, throughout the whole month of April, and in some cases, pretty well into the month of May. So yeah, this is a really, really busy time.
How would you describe the availability of fishing opportunities in Pennsylvania?
We are really, really blessed in Pennsylvania. It's a statistic that surprises a lot of people, but when you look at states, okay, because if you say what I'm about to say, it gets people to blink sometimes. But Pennsylvania is the second when it's number two, okay, besides Alaska, and you can think of Alaska, of course, but Pennsylvania is number two, right behind Alaska, with the amount of waterways that we have. So the amount of water, and not only, so we're talking like streams, rivers, lakes, publicly accessible waters is the other big part of that component. So second to Alaska with the amount of water that we have, 86,000 miles of rivers and streams. Of course, we are a Great Lake state. We've got about 70 miles of shoreline on Lake Erie, which we co-manage with New York, Ohio, and in Canada. The opportunities are around. We've got the Three Rivers region in southwestern Pennsylvania. We've got the glorious Susquehanna River that runs down the spine of our state down into central PA, and then we have amazing some coastal waters. It's not coastal in the form of the ocean, but we have some brackish water that leads into the ocean in the form of the Delaware River and up into the Schuylkill River on the eastern part of the state. And then, just take a look next time you're driving around, maybe when you're driving around listening to this podcast, hopefully, Christian. How many times do you cross a small bridge over a small stream? All of that water's connected. Small mountain tributaries all lead into a bigger stream, all lead into a bigger river, all lead into the Chesapeake Bay or the ocean. So, Pennsylvania really is a great place. And within those streams, we just have we have an enormous, bounty of sport fish and reptiles and amphibians. And so we are very lucky. So, as far as the amount of water that we have, but also the public access to that water makes Pennsylvania a really special place.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when I'm driving around at how many different bodies of water there are. Just it is constant wherever. I mean, I live right along the Susquehanna, so it's something I see every day. But on top of that, it's just whenever I travel, I'm like, man, there's another lake or another pond or another stream or another river. It seems never ending.
And I have a 13-year-old son who fishes just about every day of his life, and his life is pond hopping, and that's what we do. We live out in the country. We live out in the Hershey area of Dauphin County, and summertime hits, and that's what they do. It's a bunch of kids with a on their bikes and their backpacks, and they got a couple fishing rods sticking out of the back. And they go and knock on doors and they ask, for a lack of a better term, Old Man Jones, hey, can we fish your pond today? And sometimes he says yes, and sometimes he says, come back tomorrow, whatever. But like, it's great, and those ponds are all small impoundments of little streams that otherwise would go somewhat unnoticed. But there's a farmer, or there's just a private property owner who has impounded that small stream to create their own little fishing oasis, in their backyard. And we have those, but then we also have some great, obviously. So when I say Great Lakes, obviously we have Lake Erie. When I'm talking about Great Lakes, I should say amazing, lakes. Things like Harvey's Lake in Luzerne County, which is, it's a glacially formed natural lake. It's 200 feet deep. We have a special brown trout program in that lake because these large brown trout love the cold, deep water. We have Lake Wallenpaupack, which is an amazing, bass fishery and boating destination. Blue Marsh in Berks County. These are lakes that people know about. But then there's all sorts of lakes. I think out of the 127 or so state parks across Pennsylvania, 70 to 80% of those have a featured lake within them. So when you think about just our state park system alone, everyone knows where their closest state park is. Typically there's a lake there, and sometimes that's the best place to go for fishing in that community. It can be really the center of not only recreational opportunities, but also often an economic driver as well.
We spoke about when the fishing season begins. Does the full length of the season ever change, or does it usually remain the same?
Well, so fishing season. So that's when you say fishing season, I'm going to say fishing season never ends. It's 24/7, 365, because there's so many types of fish to catch in Pennsylvania. So there's never a time where fishing is banned, completely, for the whole state, or closed, not banned, closed, I guess, the closed season. But when you talk about trout season, right, which is what I think you're talking about. So trout season is a little bit different. Trout season exists because we support our amazing wild trout resources with a stock trout program. So we have to have a time where we can there's a thousand or so waters across the state that we manage as stocked trout waters. That's the name of the regulation on that particular section of water, is called the stocked trout program. Those waters are closed annually. It's always about the week of February 20th, right after President's Day, through the first Saturday in April. So you can't fish there at all. Even if you wanted to go out to that spot and just, fish for panfish or bass or catfish, you can't, because it's a stock trout water. So for that period of time, those waters are closed so that we can stock the trout. The trout hang out in the water for a month and a half to a day, depending on when they get stocked. They could be in there for over a month, or they could be there for about 24 hours before the anglers, get their first crack at them. But that's what creates that opening day atmosphere, that anticipation, and gets people out. So other than that, though, as far as trout season never truly closes either, because there are places where you can continue to fish for trout year round. So if you want to look at, you get the itch for trout fishing in that time period, you may not be in search of our stock trout that we're putting out there now, but you might be somewhere where there's a wild trout population, smaller streams, and we also have some great wild trout waters that are larger. Oftentimes are the headwaters of some of our larger streams or smaller rivers, where the trout are, and where the water's cold enough coming out of of its place where it originates, and then as the water gets warmer further downstream, those trout, it's kind of a line for them, the habitat's no longer good. The water temperature's too warm, but they stick up there in those cold places, and they're there year round. And we also have some lakes and special regulation areas that we manage as year-round trout fisheries. So some lakes, so let me start with places that are open for year-round fishing that might be managed under our big bass regulation. So that's another special regulation. So for instance, a Little Buffalo State Park in Perry County, for instance, people are going to want to go there to fish for bass, throughout the season. Even during those months, the period where we're stocking trout, but they can still go there and fish for bass in this time period. We don't close that particular water. And there's other places like that exist. You just have to look at the regulation. And that way you can catch, you're not supposed to target trout, but we're stocking trout in there in anticipation of opening day. But if you do catch a trout, as long as you immediately release it unharmed, it's no harm, no foul. So, and then we have these Keystone Select stock trout waters, which are a special program. There's about 20 to 25 of them across the state. And it's where we put some larger trout in the waters, we stock them, and then that's open to year-round fishing on a catch and release basis. And from you want to fish for trout in February, as long as you're using artificial lures, spinners, or trout magnets, or a fly fishing, those are the places for you. So trout season never really ends, but we have an opening day for our stock trout program.
How many fishing licenses were issued in 2023, and is that higher or lower than in recent years?
Yeah, so last year, and if anybody's interested in our statistics, as the Fish and Boat Commission, everything from license sales to our revenue, to some of the programs and things that we do, I encourage you to go online to our website, fishandboat.com, and look for our annual reports. Every year we have an obligation to the state legislature to provide them with a report of how we function, how we're spending our money, how many licenses we sold, programs that we're doing within the various, districts throughout the state. Proof of our, I like to, proof of performance really is what our greatest hits, things that we accomplished in 2023. And so, last year, as far as the license sales, we sold 790,106 fishing licenses. And then about 70% of people who purchased a regular fishing license of that almost 800,000, 70% of those over 500,000 people bought a trout permit, which means, about 70% of people who are fishing in Pennsylvania are also participating in trout fishing. And so how does that compare to other years? What it's telling us is that our baseline for judging license sales really has now become the 2019 season.
Sure.
Because when we hit 29, everything was kind of normal, from about the mid-90s up until 2019. We saw a peak in the mid-90s of approaching 1 million licenses, and then things kind of held steady or dropped slightly up until 2019, when we were right around that 800,000 license mark. And then 2020 hit, and we saw about a 20% increase in fishing licenses because of the pandemic year. So what we and then 2021 kind of followed suit. It wasn't another 20% increase, but we held on to a lot of that increase. And then after things got back to normal for the 2022 season, we saw things drop back down closer to that 2019 level. So we had that normal 2019, benchmark. Then we had the spike through the pandemic, and then things have kind of come back down. But we've held on from that 2019 year. We've grown. So that's the good news. And that bucks the trend for a lot of states across the country, where we've continued to see about a 4 to 8% increase from 2019. So where we stand now is in a good place. We're still in a place of growth, which means that, we feel like, we made the case for people to retain those folks who might have sampled us or came back to the sport, and to say, hey, we had a good time. This is worth my money, and we like fishing, so we're going to keep doing it.
How would you describe the popularity of fishing in Pennsylvania now?
just to tack on to what I just said, I mean, I think that you got a, the population of the state. I mean, if everybody had a fishing license, it would, funding would not be an issue, but at the same time, it is something that not everyone grows up with. And so you have those folks like me, who I've been fishing since I could, since I could walk, I like to say, but like, and I continued, I enjoyed those 3 years up until age 16 when I didn't need a fishing license. And then I've been a, a loyal customer ever since I turned 16, all the way to about 30 years now. 30 years later, I'm still buying that license, and I buy them for the voluntary licenses for my kids who are fishing enthusiasts as well. So, you have people like me who just grew up around it and couldn't think of life without fishing, and then you have other people who just never did it. So, the popularity of it is always just somewhat baked in with people like me. And then what the challenge is now competing with other activities, and also making the case that it's different than other activities. It's not, it's fishing is sort of on your time. Fishing is the thing that you do to relax and get it when you have a few minutes to get away from playing baseball all the time, or playing basketball or volleyball year round. People think that they have to commit to this one thing, and now I don't have time for something else like fishing. Or, well, it's fishing's about the lowest commitment thing. You can make it as much as you want, but it's also something, you keep a telescopic fishing rod in the back of your, in your trunk, and you find yourself with a couple of spare hours, and you go out and you have a little bit of fun. It's not something that's ultra time consuming, unless you make it that way, or expensive unless you make it that way. So, the popularity is sort of baked in. It's part of Pennsylvania culture, but there's so much room for others that we're constantly trying to, recruit other people into it. And we do find that once we get people, mentored into the sport, get them out there for their first experience, that and of course, getting kids involved. A lot of parents would love for their kids to fish, but the parents don't know how to fish. And then the kids learn how to fish, and oftentimes the parents learn how to fish through their kids. I've seen that happen before too. So it's very popular. The economic impact of outdoor recreation as a whole is enormous in Pennsylvania. It's in the billions of dollars. I would refer to our friends over at the state DCNR that tracks kind of all those things. But it's there, and it continues to hold steady and grow. And that's what our agency is focused on, is growing the sport, sharing the joy of fishing, and along the way, giving people an appreciation for what it takes to maintain that level of fishing, meaning quality resources, healthy fish, and public access to the water.
Pennsylvania is home to a variety of game fish. What are some of the popular game fish species?
Yeah, so we talked about trout, so we'll move on from trout, but I'll say, well, the species of trout, just to tack on, we've got our state fish, which is the native brook trout. We also raise some brook trout at our state fish hatcheries, although it's of the number of fish of the 3.2 million that we raise, brook trout is the lowest number. That the allocation of brook trout is the smallest amongst the other species. First is rainbow trout. Rainbow trout, we're raising 2/3 of the fish that we're raising across, our hatchery system are rainbow trout.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, and rainbow trout, just they're just they're the most hardy, resilient, best fighting. Pretty easy to catch. They hold well in our waters. Their survivability is great. Through surveys and things that we find, people, enjoy eating them. They enjoy catching them. They can survive multiple catches, multiple, catch and release. They're no threat to, our other species, because they ultimately are a fish that is going to be put into the water and caught. And, that's the other part of our stocking program that I'll mention too. Is, well, we'll get back to that in a minute. But rainbow trout, brown trout, brook trout, and then we have what everybody recognizes, our golden rainbow trout, which people call palominos. It's really just a genetic mutation that changes the pigment. It's a strain of pigment in a rainbow trout. So what you're really catching there is this orange looking fish with that, you know, pink stripe running down its side. We stock about, geez, I think it's about 14,000 of those across the state. So somewhat of a needle in a haystack, but when you see them and when you catch one, it's a really special catch. Outside of trout, we have smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, walleye, muskellunge, muskies, channel catfish, bullhead catfish. You know, you've you there's you know there's other species of fish that people aren't so familiar with that are popular catches, such as sauger. We also have lots of different types of panfish. So, you know, just this sort of like the sunfish family, sunnies, pumpkin seeds, you know, bluegills, crappies, perch, you know, yellow perch. So, you know, there really is a lot of different type of variety out there. What's your particular, what's your favorite fish to catch, Christian?
You know what's funny? For my entire time growing up, I fished forever. And then I think I probably hit about 16, stopped fishing, and now I'm just getting back into fishing. I'm looking for people to go fishing with. So, but
Gotcha.
I'll tell you one thing too. I've never seen smiles as big when there's some a kid holding up like a palomino. Like that just is so
Yeah.
like I it's so it's such a jarring, striking, beautiful fish that is on my list of things I'd really like to catch.
So, a quick story on that. You know, I've part of my job as communications, you know, director for the Fish and Boat Commission isn't just, you know, talking on podcasts and being a spokesperson, you know. My background is in like broadcasting and so running a press office and responding to questions, being somewhat of a you know a knowledge dumping ground, and then I you know put that knowledge back out. You know, when people ask questions, I sort of have to know a little bit about everything. And when I my, when my knowledge, you know, when I need more, I go to the experts. You know, we have our biologists and our other folks, you know, law enforcement folks in our agency that can help answer questions for people. But the other thing I do is, you know, is make videos. So if you ever go on to you know our YouTube channel, there's we actually have two of them. There's the YouTube channel that's this the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. And then there's a YouTube channel that I use through the press office, which has over 1,000 subscribers, but it's called PA Fish and Boat Media. And PA Fish and Boat Media is basically my clearinghouse, dumping ground for, you know, B-roll. So when I go out to a trout stocking, I put together some footage. I send that out to the masses of in the media, and it oftentimes gets used on TV stations and radio stations and things, you know, or sound bites. And so having putting together that content, I've seen, and going to our hatcheries, I've seen thousands of golden rainbow trout. Palominos. Never caught one. Never caught one until December of 2023. December. Me and it was a nice day, and me and my kids went out to a local lake here in the Dauphin. It's actually in Lebanon County, and Marquette Lake out on the grounds of Fort Indiantown Gap, one of our stocked trout waters. But you know, trout hadn't been stocked in there for months. We were just messing around. My son is a big bass fisherman. He was fishing, trying to catch some bass. I threw a worm in and was sitting there, you know, waiting for a few minutes. Got a nibble on the end, gave it a yank, and I pulled in a golden rainbow trout. And then so in December, one of these holdover stock trout that just happened to be hanging out in that lake. And I'm telling you, my smile was probably bigger than most of those kids from Mentored Youth Day. So it could even if it can happen to me, you know, it could happen to you. I'll just put it that way. So.
Yeah, when you describe a needle in a haystack, that's even a smaller needle in a bigger haystack if you're going that late, I feel like.
Yeah, I was not expecting to catch a trout at that point, let alone a golden rainbow trout. And what was interesting about them is, you know, the color that's so vibrant from, you know, in that pigment. Basically a lot of fish, you know, if you've ever had if anyone who's owned an aquarium knows that the color of the fish oftentimes depends on their food source. So, you know, there's certainly colors that are part of, you know, the species will always have a level of, you know, different colors to them, but the brightness of those colors depends on what they're eating. So anything that's eating a lot of, like shrimp or things like that, for instance, a fish that would eat is going to have that. It's going to come up with that pink, color. It's going to be more vibrant. One of the reasons why people say to us, the fish that we catch are beautiful. These stock trout, not only are they fairly big, but the colors are fantastic. But it comes down to the quality of food that we feed them. And in recent years, there's to help enhance the color, one of the ingredients within the food that they're eating at the hatcheries is carotene. So the same, if you think about eating I don't recommend it, but if you drink a big drink a gallon of carrot juice every day, you're going to end up looking like an Oompa Loompa most likely. I think it probably well, but what it does is it will eventually it enhances and brings out those natural colors within the fish even more. So the fish that I caught in December, he hadn't been eating that easy hatchery food for a while. He was certainly a survivor. He'd probably been eating a lot of aquatic, macroinvertebrates and insects and maybe some earthworms, but he was still orange, but it wasn't as vibrant as it was. So over those months, he certainly lost a little bit of its color. But those are the type of things that you see once you start to understand how fish work.
That's awesome. The state fish of Pennsylvania is the brook trout, also known as a brookie. What can you tell us about this colorful trout species?
Yeah, so when we touched on that before, to talk about the fact that it's our it's the only native trout in Pennsylvania. Everything else, we have some naturalized species that through over 100 even before our agency existed, there were people were bringing were putting fish in the water, and some of those species held on. One of them was the brown trout. So in many parts of Pennsylvania now we have native populations of brown trout. Wild, I should say, wild populations of brown trout. And so we manage those as wild fish as well. But we have when it comes to the brook trout are special. Brook trout not only are they're it's a delicate species. They rely, as when we talk about fish, we kind of categorize them as cold water species and warm water species. And when we're talking cold water species of fish in Pennsylvania, we're really just talking about trout. There are some other smaller cold water fish that exist in only in very cold water, but really when it comes down to the fish that people are seeking out, sport fish, it's trout. And they require cold water. So thinking about this before we just talk to me and I'll talk about the brook trout for a minute. The reason why we're stocking fish in this time of year is because again, you talked about driving around and you go over a bridge and there's some water. Well, that creek looks great right now. It may not look great at the moment because it's almost probably pretty high because we're getting lots of rain across Pennsylvania. But that water is going to be very cold over the winter and here into spring. And then once we get to June, July, August, you're going to notice that same creek that you drove over top is going to be almost gone. The water flows are going to be low. It's going to be barely moving, and unless you get a big rain, and it's most likely just a little creek that's the water's too warm. So we're able to stock trout in these waters now, these warm water streams, because the water is cold enough. Then when we get to the summertime, those streams would not be able to support trout naturally. So the habitat's not there and the water's too warm. So that's why our stock trout program works in those type of waters. We're putting them in. It's a put and take system. We stock the trout. We want you to take them out. It's a recreational opportunity. You've paid for it through your trout permit. We put those fish in. You take them out, take them home, eat them. And then guess what? The rest are left over for the birds and the other animals that eat, that eat fish. So when I say that, the reason why is because those are streams that just don't have populations of wild trout in them. They're just not cold enough. So where we have brook trout are in streams that are cold enough year round, that don't need, that don't get warm, that have the habitat that delicate fish needs. And so we don't need to stock trout in those waters because we have native populations of fish. And in some cases, those fish are those streams are very small. They're never going to grow any wider than your bathtub. You know, the stream is never going to be any wider than like, you know, just a couple of feet wide, like I'd say, like your bathtub. In other places, it's, you know, they can, it can be a river. So brook trout are inhabiting those places where the water is very cold, and in our, it's our job to protect those areas so that those brook trout can continue to live. So we've identified through we have a program. It's called the Unassessed Waters Program. Basically, over the years, Fish and Boat Commission, in partnership recently with many universities and other organizations, you know, we've surveyed, we've gone and get onto properties deep in the woods, you know, also, you know, right along an interstate highway in some cases, and we use an electroshocking technique to put a current. We walk the streams. We use people have seen pictures of it, but if you've never seen electrofishing, just Google it, and it's a way of kind of putting a small electric current in the water. It brings, kind of stuns the fish, brings them up to the surface. We net them, we count them, we put them back. They recover, they swim off just like nothing happened. It's like almost like an alien abduction, right? So, and when we find wild trout in those areas, and then we find them in greater concentrations, those areas are then classified as wild trout waters or Class A wild trout streams. And when they get that Class A trout stream designation, the protections that are provided to those waterways are pretty good. And what that means is they get on our list, and anytime there's any sort of development or, you know, highway work or infrastructure or building around those areas, you know, there are restrictions based on that to protect those waters. So it's a wild resource. They're an indicator of cold water and clean water, because if the water's warm or dirty, brook trout aren't going to live there. So brook trout are somewhat of our canary in the coal mine, is a better way to put it. And through those programs, you know, to protect them, that's you know, that's what we're doing. We want to make sure that they're around. And you know, that we there's a debate oftentimes about you know, between our you know, there's people who are enthusiasts for wild trout, and I just want to ensure, you know, assure of people that, you know, the vast majority of places, because I think our stocking program is often misunderstood, the vast majority of places that we're stocking trout do not have any wild trout habitat. There just wouldn't be any trout in these streams otherwise, except for our stocking. And there are some places that are that do contain wild trout. There's a handful across the state that they do have wild trout populations, and they're very, very heavily fished. And to supplement that, to keep the angling pressure off of, you know, the wild trout, we do put some stock trout in those waters, and we co-manage them specially so that people can go out there and enjoy both. So, you know, but that way they're not decimating the wild trout population. However, we're still providing a fishing opportunity. And in other ways that we allow people, you know, people can continue to stock or can continue to fish for wild trout, such as brook trout. But in some places, they are, you know, they're protected through special regulations that would be catch and release. So, you know, you can read a lot more about the brook trout. It is a fascinating fish. They're beautiful, colorful, iconic here in Pennsylvania. We care an awful lot about them, and you know, we have folks on staff that are dedicated to just, you know, the study, and they're dedicated their entire 30 or 40 year careers with our agency to the protection of wild brook trout.
And now, let's hear from our sponsors. For over 40 years, Keystone Trails Association has been helping to keep Pennsylvania's hiking trails safe and beautiful through its volunteer-based trail care program. Take part in this fun tradition at Trail Love, Michaux State Forest Edition, a special maintenance event on Friday, May 31st and Saturday, June 1st. Beginner-friendly projects will be available. Enjoy a free lunch and a tie-dye t-shirt. Sign up at kta-hike.org. Are you looking for your next adventure? Unlock some of the best landscapes in Pennsylvania with incredibly detailed, highly curated, waterproof maps from the folks at Purple Lizard. They create extraordinary maps of Pennsylvania State Forest for people who love to explore the outdoors. Find them at your local outfitters, bike shops, and bookstores, or visit purplelizard.com, where your next adventure begins. Hey, podcast explorers. Did you know Pennsylvania State Parks and Forests are the heartbeat of our Commonwealth? They're not just natural wonders. They're vital for our well-being and local economies. That's where the Pennsylvania Parks and Forest Foundation steps in. They rally volunteers, raise funds, and advocate for these precious lands. Join the movement to preserve and enjoy our outdoor treasures. Learn more at paparksandforests.org. Let's keep Pennsylvania untamed and beautiful together. All right, back to the show. Where can people go to find the trout stocking schedule?
Fishandboat.com. So go to fishandboat.com. That's where you're going to, if you're sitting there on your phone, you can also just look up Pennsylvania trout stocking schedule on the, Google it and you'll find it. It's the format changed this year. So if you're familiar with it and you're looking at it, yeah, we know that it's different. People don't like change sometimes. So the format of our trout stocking schedule looks a little different this year, but I can tell you once you get used to it, it's not that bad. The basics that you have to understand when you're going to look for a trout stocking, location is that you can look at the schedule. You can look for your county. Then from there, you can break it down into just the water that you're interested in. Or if you're looking for a water, you can look at the list of waters. It's going to tell you the date and the time that the water is going to be stocked, what type of fish are going to be stocked. If you're interested in helping us to stock, we welcome volunteers. So all of our stockings are open to the public. Find that meeting time, the meeting place, come on out, and we'll make sure you got a bucket full of trout to help us throw into the water.
Pennsylvania's bodies of water can vary in size and characteristics. What does the type of water, whether it's a river, lake, or pond, impact the fishing experience, and what should anglers keep in mind when choosing their fishing destination?
Yeah, so it's, it's one of the good things is to have variety. We have small mountain streams with, wild native populations of brook trout. Then we have impoundments, which are, lakes that are formed by someone put a dam on the water, and it's probably owned by, a power company or a water company, or maybe a state, agency like the DCNR or the Game Commission or the Fish and Boat Commission. We have about 50 lakes. It depends, if you like to fish from the stream, the bank, or do you like to be out in the middle of a lake on a boat? So it's really up to the individual, but, you can catch fish from anywhere. So you don't need the big, you don't need a big, 16 or 18 foot bass boat with, dual outboard motors on the back, you could kayak on particular waters. You can wade in a pair of, sneakers and shorts and walk out into the Susquehanna River like I used to as a kid, or the Swatara Creek. For kids or newcomers, we oftentimes recommend, if you're fishing from a boat or, just starting to get into fishing, find one of those ponds or find a lake. Find the still water. It takes the element. It makes it a little bit easier to learn the skills. But there's some species like muskies that are, people have certain methods for catching them out on our rivers. They like fast moving, bright, shiny lures trolled quickly behind the back of a boat. You're not going to be able to really do that. Some people aren't going to be able to do that kind of thing. At the same time, you can catch muskies from the side of the, the side of the stream, if you know where they're at. So every water has its own identity, and you want to match up, not only like, hey, what am I capable of? Am I capable of getting out into the middle of that lake somehow on a boat, on a kayak? Or am I sort of limited right now to just kind of walking along the side of the stream? So I don't know if that really answers your question, Christian, but I like to tell people, like, try different things and find out what's for you. Some people can get bored quickly if they, by standing on the side of a lake and throwing a worm or a minnow out there and just kind of waiting. Other people like active fishing. So, putting on like a spinner or a chatterbait or a rooster tail, something like that, and actively fishing and walking up and down a stream. That could be more for them. Some people want to make things even more, the experience even more, I would say complicated, but different. And in through fly fishing. You're going to have to learn a lot about, you have to think like a fish. You have to know what the hatch is out there. Different insects are hatching different times a year that those fish are going to feed on. Their food availability and what they're hungry for is going to be based on the time of year. So the and it just takes a lot more technique and other things. So find what you're capable of doing, what you're interested in doing. Sample each of those, from the big rivers to the big lakes to the small ponds and the small streams, and see what's right for you. There's no wrong answer.
The Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission plays a crucial role in managing fisheries. Can you talk about your conservation efforts and the impact on the overall fishing experience in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about special regulations and how we manage waters, but it's also about creating opportunities and creating places for these for various types of fish to exist. So there's places that Mother Nature has done a great job of providing that will never be touched for for the they're protected and they're within an area that's never going to be developed in any sort of way. So that place isn't going to change. In other places, we have a stream that may have been a great stream to fish at one point, and then development came in, and a lot of impacts of runoff and agricultural impacts and things that have maybe damaged that stream and made it less of an attractive place for not only fish to exist, but as a result, then fishing opportunities aren't so great anymore. So as an agency, we do things constantly to enhance. It's part of our mission: conserve, protect, and enhance. And the enhance part means that we're trying to make better fisheries. So we look at habitat and where there's a lack of habitat. And the best example I can use that people can understand is, when we have oftentimes over the winter, if you drive by a lake, those lakes are drawn down, which means it's this fancy word for drained, drained partially. And there's a couple of reasons why they drain lakes in the wintertime. The number one reason is because infrastructure. Dams, spillways, the things that make the lake, the dam, they need to be repaired. It's oftentimes concrete or, other, there's pipes and things like that associated with dams that need to be maintained, replaced. So they draw those down, they work on that kind of stuff, and then later they'll fill the lake back up. The other reason is because along, if you go fishing at a lake or a pond in the middle of the summertime, it gets very weedy. And so, yeah, and it gets harder to fish from the bank. And then you get oxygen depletion because these grasses, oftentimes invasive species of aquatic plant life, are growing up very quickly. It chokes out the oxygen in the water, and then that has a result, and it ends up, we end up, sometimes you'll see dead bluegills or bass and things or catfish along the bank because they're competing for that same oxygen as those plants are. So when they draw the lakes down in the wintertime, they're allowing the seeds from those plants to die off, so that they die over the winter. There's no water there to feed them. They die, they freeze off. And then when they fill the lake back up in the summertime up to a higher level, that keeps those weeds from growing back so quickly. Well, while the lakes are drawn down, oftentimes we can do habitat enhancements. So if you think about a bowl of cereal, it's really not much going on in that bowl of cereal. It's just a bowl. And then you put the milk and the cereal in it, now it's something. Well, what with a lake, it's kind of the same way. It's just sort of a flat, muddy bottom. There's not much underneath there. So in order to the fish have some, there's maybe some stumps or some old trees that have fallen in there, or some sort of debris, those grasses, as we mentioned. But if we can create more habitat in the bottom of those lakes, we can create fishing hotspots. We can create places. These wooden structures that we have special, a dozen different types of structures that we can construct out of wood and rocks, and that will last, a couple of decades. When the water's down, we can build those right into into the lake bed. Those structures will be covered with algae. Then they become covered with macroinvertebrates, the underwater insects. Those macroinvertebrates attract smaller, minnows, and those minnows attract bigger fish. And then those bigger fish attract the anglers. So we have, habitat in our lakes. We have a lake habitat program that's very successful. And so that's one way, we enhance habitat. And then we also do things along our streams. So we'll do wild, if we have a we find a cold water stream that needs, that's maybe struggling, lack of habitat. we also have a division that works on stream habitat, and that's things like stream bank stabilization, where there might be some erosion where, hey, we're getting a lot of rain like we are now. That's just pushing those banks up higher and higher. And if they're already exposed and dirty and muddy along the edges, you've seen it before. You walk through the woods and you see this high stream bank. It didn't get that way. It shouldn't be that way. But over years and years, especially if you have an area like a parking lot or something nearby, that's just water's running off of there. It's running through some pipe eventually under a road and into a stream in an unnatural way and pushing all this water very quickly into a stream. It erodes the sides of the bank. So we do stream bank stabilization, getting these streams back into a natural place where it's more conducive for the survival of our aquatic life. And as a result, enhances them not only for the fish populations, but also for the anglers.
Are there any conservation projects coming up in the next year or two that you're excited about?
Well, we have a lot of things on our agenda. Specific. So when I say particular projects, one of the things that I would mention is, because depending on where you live, all the things that I just mentioned are happening all over the state.
Yeah.
And there's been a particular concentrated effort on the Chesapeake Bay watershed in recent years because of federal mandates and things like that with our partner agencies like the DEP and the Department of Agriculture, because everything flows downstream. So there's been a special effort and more money funneled into those areas, the Susquehanna River, which leads into the Chesapeake Bay. So a lot of the projects that we're doing along those waterways that lead into the bay have been very quick and been very impactful very, very quickly. But something that people are maybe not aware of that we're doing that's a major effort is we took an old fish hatchery up in Union City, up in Erie County, and converted it into a mussel propagation facility. So we're growing mussels there. We're growing native species of mussels. And in places where mussels have been somewhat depleted, whether it was due to a pollution incident, such as in there's a place called Ground Zero for this is kind of like Dunkard Creek in Greene County, down towards the West Virginia line down there in southwestern PA. There's a pollution event that wiped out native populations of mussels. The West Branch Susquehanna River is another area up in the central part of the state where mussels we're trying to get a comeback for mussels and all over the place. Mussels are nature's filter. So, you've seen the demonstration before where you take a dirty jar of water and you put some mussels in it, and an hour later you look at it and the water's clear. Because mussels have this amazing ability to filter our water. So, how do mussels, you have to know in order to understand how mussels have, why there's areas where mussels no longer exist, you have to understand how they grow. Mussels are, in order to become full grown mussels, they start off as larvae, which attach themselves to the gill of a host fish. And then the host fish swims throughout the river. And then when the mussel is large enough to drop off and become in it falls out of the fish's gills, it lands on the bottom of the creek or the river, and it grows into a mussel. And then that mussel over the years will live and filter the water and creates cleaner water. But if the fish can't move, then the mussels aren't going to get to certain places. And one of the big places, one of the big obstacles for mussels is dams on our waterways. So you have these places where mussels exist in great numbers, and then all of a sudden there's a dam, and then up above that dam, there's no mussels because they've come back. Water quality's improved. These mussels are now existing, and we're finding then you get above the dam, and they're not there. So we have to take efforts to we're growing our own mussels using host fish and everything in that facility, and then we're taking the mussels when they reach a certain size. And we're going out and we're planting them in the streams, in the places where they're not there. And then from there they'll grow and repopulate our waterways. So that's one of the really, really exciting projects.
Getting the youth involved in fishing ensures the continued popularity of the hobby. How is the Fish and Boat Commission promoting fishing for future generations?
Well, we talked about our youth programs like Mentored Youth Trout Day, which we just had this past Saturday, and That really is the key. It's one day out of the year that we open that trout season up, a week early for kids. And that's just the way to, the goal of that program is not to get out there and take, get a busload of kids and drop them off at a lake and say, go ahead and fish, and good luck, kids.
Sure.
The goal is to take someone like me and my, when my kids were 5, 6, 7 years old, maybe if they've never fished before, even if they're 12, 13, 14, or 15, that's the age where, you're going out there and you're mentoring someone, you're teaching them how to do it. Their parents, maybe not, they don't, I have this situation in our household. My kids have lots of friends, and my kids are really into fishing, and their friends would love to go along with them. Or they go back to the pond here behind our property, and they go home and they tell their parents how much they loved going fishing. And their parents are like, well, I'd love for you to do more of that, but I don't know what I'm doing. So you have to, we're trying to find those opportunities to mentor the kids into the activity. And the same thing goes for, not only for trout fishing, but for all forms of fishing. So we have programs that are introductory programs, that we either, hold on our own through our team of educators that we have across the various regions of the state. We have staff that are out there putting on education programs. Go to fishandboat.com, look up our calendar of events, and see if you can find an education program near you that's introductory. So maybe, you can go out there and learn a family fishing event. There's oftentimes, look around, look in the local paper, look on Facebook, look where you can, look up a fishing rodeos, or trout fishing derbies. These are places that you're going to go that you're going to be like, look, I don't really know what I'm doing, but they're probably going to provide bait. They're probably going to provide tackle. There's going to be someone there who's going to be able to help you and help your child. So instead of sitting back and saying, man, I wish, seek out places, seek out an individual that and don't tell them, don't send them off, don't send your kid off with them to go fishing. If you're interested in doing it, go, ask if you can go along. You know what it's like. As anglers, I think we all like, you're always looking for our next fishing buddy, And yeah, fortunately, I got two of them, that grew up right here in my house. So once football's over and high school and wrestling and volleyball and all the other things that my kids are doing right now and thriving in and having a great time, we're still going to have fishing and hunting, I'd like to believe. And I think that those are things that are lifetime experiences. So, teaching them when they're young, finding the opportunities for them now so they kind of becomes ingrained in them, like riding a bike. Even when they get into college and they get very busy, they're going to look back on those times and say, you know what, as soon as once I find some more time again, it's something I'm going to be able to fall back on. Even if I just know the basics and it's not foreign to me or scary, I know that this is something I can do. I get invited fishing with somebody at some point during my life, I'm going to be able to hold my own, So those are the things that we do. We have programs. When you buy, I encourage anybody who takes their kid fishing, even though you don't need a license until you're age 16. We have a voluntary youth fishing license. Voluntary youth fishing license costs $2.97. A whole dollar of that goes to the Fish and Boat Commission. But because it's a fishing license and it's actually a license, we receive funding from the federal government based on the number of licenses that we sell, because that means that we have, a population of anglers to be served, then we get a bigger chunk of that pie that they gather through excise taxes on fishing equipment. And then it funnels into Washington and comes down to us from the federal government. So if you buy a license for a kid, we essentially you pay, you're giving us a dollar of that money, but we're actually getting about another $5 from the government. And because it's a youth license, that money's going into youth programs. So to support the youth programs, sure, I tell everybody, look, you don't have the money, you don't, there's no obligation. Don't buy a license. You don't need one until you're 16. But if you want to support youth programs and you want more of them, that's a great way to do it. Buy that voluntary youth fishing license and help fund the programs for the future.
Do your recommendations about where kids can go to learn to fish, is that could those be any different for adults, or do you think it still applies to adults? Like someone like me who wants to go fishing, who wants to learn, are there other resources or different resources I should check out?
It's about the same. I still say the best thing to do is find somebody who fishes and see if you can, and ask him to go along. You're gonna get more out of that experience with someone. It's there is a you know that there's a lot of value in having a mentor in something that in that you're doing that's new. Someone who's just going to show you around, like, here, borrow my fishing rod for the day. Give it a try. People do this with things like golfing all the time. Why not do it with fishing, right? I mean, no one's going to go out and buy a 600, or maybe I'm behind the times here, but, a $600 set of golf clubs just to find out if they like golfing. And then if they don't like it, what am I going to do with these clubs?
Sure.
Fishing's not that expensive, but at the same time, it's complicated. You need someone who, ask somebody to go fishing. Someone who would say, "Hey, man, would you take me along sometime?" You're going to find that there's people who are super willing to do it. Don't be afraid. I think that one of the barriers is just general, reluctancy to talk to a stranger or something. And so. You don't just want, maybe you don't want to walk up to somebody that you've, on the side of the stream, but go to a bait shop. Go to a place where there's a, get some advice from someone, who works at the in the sporting goods department, at a Bass, whether it's Walmart or Dick's Sporting Goods or Bass Pro Shop, and talk them up a little bit. I bet you you're probably gonna walk out of there with a little bit of information about, somewhere to go. Our resources on fishandboat.com, they're going to let you know places to fish, but it's getting out there. It's like, you got the rod, you got the place to go, but you still kind of don't know what you're doing. Finding somebody, along the way and just asking for a little bit of advice. There's a joke, and it's somewhat not of a joke, for but people don't like to give up their fishing secrets or their fishing hole. So, the state park's not much of a secret, so if you're going to go out to your local state park lake and mess around fishing, it doesn't matter if you're mentoring a 5-year-old kid or you're 25 or 35, you'll find somebody who'll help you out.
Has one method of fishing become more popular than others in recent years? Like, have you seen more people in fly fishing or shore casting as opposed to fishing from boats?
I'd say the one thing that's a tremendous area of growth when it comes to not only fishing, but also boating, and then the combination of the two is kayak fishing. So kayaks are so accessible these days. They cost a couple $100. You can literally buy one, take it out, be on the water in a couple of hours, which is both good and bad. The good part about it is the accessibility to, that type of fishing, and to be able to, not very expensive. It's not like buying a big boat that you need a trailer or, trailer around. You can pretty much throw it on top of your car or in the back of your minivan or in the back of your pickup truck, and you're there. The experience of fishing from a kayak is great because you can get into those nooks. You can get out into the middle of a lake. You can get out, you can patrol different sides of the shoreline, and things look a lot different, when you're out on the water than it does when you're in the, standing on the shore. It's a constantly moving environment for those people who have that little bit of a attention deficit, I guess. When you're floating down a stream, it gives you something to do. So, people will find, like, I like kayaking, but I wish it didn't take me 3 hours to get from point A to point B. I am kind of like, man, I'm just paddling. It seems like a lot more work. Well, if you're fishing in between all that work, it kind of makes the experience better. I always say, I don't really want to go kayaking unless I'm fishing.
Sure, yeah.
Kayak fishing is probably one of the things. The only thing I would warn people about is, go on the places like a lake. If you're new to kayaking and you think it sounds like something that would be fun, but you've never kayaked before, don't go right out onto that river. Don't go right out into that moving stream. There's so many obstacles and things that you can run into, dams that can be a little bit tough. Go out, learn how to kayak, get the basic skills down. Make sure you get your launch permit or register. If you're going to use any public boat ramp, you want to make sure that you've got that sticker. Costs about $12 a year. You put it on the side of your boat. You can use any of the state park boat ramps, any Fish and Boat Commission boat ramps, and that's going to open up your experience. So try different places and get the skills down before you go out there. and always wear your life jacket. The law says you have to have a life jacket with you when you're on a, you know, a canoe or a kayak, but you know, it really isn't going to do you much good if you're not wearing it. So find a life jacket that's good for you, one that fits a non-bulky style for your activity, and you'll find that they're pretty comfortable. And I don't go anywhere without my life jacket. So
Pennsylvania has a rich history of fly fishing. Can you discuss the evolution of fly fishing in Pennsylvania and its significance among anglers?
fly fishing is it's one of those polarizing activities. I'll say that from experience working with the agency. It's great. Fly fishing is amazing. Fly fishing will open your eyes to a new type of experience. So when you really get down to it, if you learn it while you're young, it's not as nearly as intimidating. Like I learned it when I was in my 20s, and it's still not my preferred form of fishing, but I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it immensely, and I have found success with fly fishing at times when I knew, like, this worm, this spinner, this is not working today. I get out there with a little bit of proficiency with fly fishing, and all of a sudden I'm like, where did this fish come from? Has this fish been there the whole time? So, you know, you can really open up a new world for yourself if you learn how to do it. I will say this. I think some people have probably maybe taken a little bit. Maybe I'm talking personally here, not from a Fish and Boat Commission standpoint. If I can veer for one second, I think some people take it a little too far sometimes, and feel that it's the only way to fish.
Yeah, anytime someone tries to tell you what the right way to do something that's a hobby. It's probably when you should start questioning things.
Yeah, and no, I get it. You know, we're all passionate. Some people like classic cars. Some people like, you know, craft beer, and some people like fly fishing, you know, but like there's alternatives to all of those things. And I think, you know, one without the other doesn't make the other one, you know, special, or, you know, there's reasons why people like different things. So being open to it and making sure that, you know, you don't get, you know, feel as if you're, you know, making, I don't want to use the word shaming people, but, you know, there are conflicts that we see sometimes on waterways between, you know, spinning reel bait anglers and fly anglers, and it's just so unnecessary because in the end we're all after the same thing. However, let's get off my soapbox about that and say that, you know, as someone who enjoys both, I've been in situations where I can relate to everybody. I would just say that remember that we're all in the same, you know, we're all fishermen when it comes down to it, and we can all get along. And I think 99.9% of us do. But so what makes fly fishing popular? Just again, the availability of the streams, the availability that we have, you know, to do that activity in new places. We just have some of the premier fly fishing waters, you know, in the state. I mean, when it comes to places like the Yellow Breeches, the Latorte Spring Run in Cumberland County, you know, Penns Creek, Spruce Creek, you know, in Centre County, these trout destinations that people go to that come in from all over the country to enjoy. But then if you've ever just gone out into the Susquehanna River, because every place is a fly fishing water. So it's not just fly fishing, like, you know, a river runs through it, the movie, you know, like this is, if you've never fly fished for just sunfish on a pond, or you know, there's guys that fly fish for muskies, believe it or not, and the pictures they show are incredible. It's a different experience, and the availability of these waters to be able to do it, the space that we have, the camaraderie amongst the people who do it and teach each other, the somewhat of the science and education that goes along with the activity, that, you know, you kind of, again, you learn these streams, you see what the fish are eating, you adjust your fly to that. It's a different experience. So between the access and just that niche, you know, of a group to belong to, I think that's what makes it so popular.
In addition to traditional fishing methods, ice fishing is also popular in Pennsylvania during the winter months. What are some key considerations and tips for anglers interested in trying ice fishing for the first time?
Well, we don't get ice every year
Yeah. Yeah.
in all parts of the state. There are some reliable places up in the northern tier of Pennsylvania where we get ice, but as someone who's dabbled in ice fishing, over the last 15 to 20 years, I can tell you, this past year was very disappointing. So, the number one thing to do is recognize safety as your number one priority before anything above all else. Just because you see somebody, what looks like, somebody's walking out on the ice, doesn't mean that that person, it doesn't mean that that ice is going to be adequate for to be out there, for ice fishing. So there's no agency, whether it's the Fish and Boat Commission, DCNR, anybody else that officially regulates or manages the ice thickness and reports that out and says, okay, today's a safe day, tomorrow's not a safe day. But the general rule is you want 4 inches of ice. So at least 4 inches. And then, there's going to be places where it's going to be much more than that. And there's going to be places where it's borderline and there's going to still be people out there. So first and foremost is being prepared, making sure that you know that I always say this, don't be the first guy out there. Leave that to somebody else, okay? Because if the person's out there doing it and looks like they're established as an ice fisherman, they're probably not brand new at it. They probably know what they're doing. And then if you can determine that there's a couple of people out there ice fishing, okay, that's a good sign that it's okay for you to go out there and give it a try. We do have ice fishing programs, but based on those things fill up, and also if you're able to travel, and it's wintertime, you may not be able to make it there. We have online resources, videos. Watch some videos online before you go out so you understand the basics of it. And then also don't invest too much money into it because you just might not like it. It's one of those things where, you might get a couple of days out of it, or you might get a couple of weeks out of it for the year. So if you're going to spend a lot of money, I ordered an auger and I ordered a bunch of ice fishing rods and some tip-ups, and I spent all this money on a little tent that I'm going to put up around the hole. You get your expectations up, and then you realize, man, it's windy and cold out here, and I'm not catching anything, or all this for a couple of yellow perch. Some people realize, hey, this was fun to try, but now I'm stuck with all this gear, and I'm probably either A, not going to get to use it every year, or B, I just didn't really enjoy it that much. So again, if you can find, it's how my personal story is this: Gifford Pinchot State Park, York County. I used to drive. I used to live in that area, and I passed by the lake. We had a cold winter back in, I think, 2011, 2012. I saw some guys out there and decided to walk out onto the ice and say hi. And these are the guys ended up being awesome. They invited me out. I went out with them the next day. We ended up ice fishing together for like 4 or 5 years, and until I moved. And we had great, great, great experiences. The best experience we had was catching a big, like, 22-inch channel catfish out of the ice, and it was the greatest thing ever. It was like to see this big fish come out of this little hole in the ice. Keep your expectations low. Enjoy it for what it is. If you're able to travel and meet up with somebody, in one of those northern counties where that's a little bit more reliable, that might be something that you can set your clock to a little bit more than if you live down in the southeastern or south central part of the state. But it's there. It's another way to get the value out of your fishing license. You buy that license and you pin it all on one day, and you don't have a great day. All of a sudden, that fishing license seems like, now you're complaining about how much you spent on it. You think about the pennies that it costs if you fish a couple of days, or multiple days a year, and it's all of a sudden that value of that fishing license is now you feel like you're the one, like I should pay more for this. The ice fishing is a way to extend your fishing throughout the entire year.
Conservation and responsible angling are essential for sustaining fish populations. What practices do you recommend to anglers to ensure that they are contributing to the long-term health of Pennsylvania's fisheries?
Number one, just be aware of the regulations before you head out, and make sure that you know what your season sizes and creel limits are, and understand that there's a reason for those. There's a reason why you're allowed to catch, 50 panfish, like bluegills, a day, and there's a reason why you're only allowed to catch, five trout a day during the regular trout season. Or there's a reason why you're not allowed to keep bass under a certain size. These things are all because these are in place. These are as a result of studies that say either, this is a limited resource. In order to keep it plentiful, We need to make sure this is what we think based on the number of people that are fishing versus the number that of these fish that can be removed and still continue to, sustain themselves in our waters. So if you're out there violating the creel limits, and because you understand that that's not doing anybody, we're not doing anybody any good. I think that all of those season sizes and creel limits that we have for our fish in Pennsylvania are very fair and more than enough for everyone to enjoy. And the other thing is, if there's a part about all of us. I think overwhelmingly anglers and hunters are very just ethical people. I think that we all have had an experience. We understand that it's really the thrill of fishing is catching a fish is great, but it's the anticipation of catching the fish that is what really happens. And we all feel a little bit bad if we have a bad experience where, man, we held on to that fish because I don't want to keep this fish, but I wanted to get my picture with it. And we hold on to that fish a little bit too long, and we get our picture, and we're on such a high, and we feel so good, and we put it back in the water, and it's belly up because we didn't do things right. So, making sure that we're handling, just thinking about the things in the moment, thinking about the fish. If you're not planning on, look, I say to people all the time, if it's legal and you're hungry, keep the fish. Take it home, eat it, that's why that's part of this deal. Part of fishing is catching it, eating it. That's part of the experience too, but if you're out there and it's just catch and release, make sure that you're practicing those ethical things. Use the right kind of net. Don't use an old net that's all jagged and hard, and it's probably going to hurt the fish. Invest in a little bit better of a net. Keep the fish wet. Keep your hands wet. If you want to get that picture, all right, things aren't going so great. The fish is flopping around. You get distracted, whatever. Put them back in the water for a minute, right? Then get them back out. Those type of things, and then just abiding by the season size and creel limits, so that we can all have enough, for everybody. And just passing that on to others about how important it is. You see somebody bending a rules. Look, you're bending a rule. It happens. We're all out there. Things happen. But look, if we don't have the rules, then we have chaos. And so without that management of our resources, things quickly fall into chaos. And so we want to make sure that people just abide by those rules and also understand that they're not there just because we made them up and we want to have rules for people. They're there because we want these opportunities to exist. And we don't, we want to be able to do this next year and 10 years from now and 100 years from now too.
Mike, thanks so much for talking to us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, it's been great. Thank you so much, Christian. I tend to ramble on, but I really appreciate the opportunity, and the questions are great. I'll enjoy listening to your podcast, and wish you the best out there. I say to everybody, have fun, be safe, wear your life jacket, and if you need anything else, fishing and boating related, introduce someone else to the sport, find a great place to go fishing. You can find it all at fishandboat.com.
I want to thank my guest, Mike Parker, for joining the podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Meta for more information about upcoming episodes. You can support the podcast by buying merch at hemlockstohellbenders.com, or you can click support this show in the podcast description to provide a monthly donation. If you're a Pennsylvania business interested in advertising with the podcast, email us at hemlockstohellbenders@gmail.com. This has been Hemlocks to Hellbenders. I'll see you out there. Hosting, production, and editing by Christian Alexanderson. Music by John Sauer. Graphics by Matt Davis.